Labor to order, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 400B.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 400B modifies the definition of employment relations under public employee collective bargaining law to include safety and staffing issues only as they relate to on-the-job safety. You have in front of you a -B8 amendment. It is identical to the -B7 amendment that was distributed to your offices yesterday. It modifies the employment relations definition to include safety issues that have an impact on on-the-job safety of the employees or staffing levels that have a significant impact on on-the-job safety of the employees. It also includes conflict amendments that resolve an issue with one of the provisions of House Bill 2372.
Thank you. I'd like to call Brian DeLashmet, Bob Livingston, and the League of Oregon Cities, whoever one of you, one of you gentlemen wants to come on up here and speak to this, please. Brian, you want to go walk through the amendment for us, please, and then we'll go to Bob and then Mr. Bryant, right?
Mr. Bryant.
Go ahead.
For the record, Brian DeLashmet, representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations and others. I won't go through that entire list. These amendments that you see before you are the result of intensive negotiations, battles, struggles, give and take, and finally were agreed to by the parties that you see in front of you as of last Thursday, a week ago Thursday. Obviously, the bill needed then to be brought off the table and brought back to you, and these need to be drafted. But in essence, what they do is codify, at least on the area of safety, where you were already at before, which is safety does not have potential in front of it. It's just safety. And if you recall, we were talking at that point about the ability of an employee or employees groups to talk about safety issues based upon a reasonable man standard. And then the only change, the real change that you see between this and what you saw come out of the committees the last two times is when it deals with the word significant. If you recall, current statute has direct and substantial as the qualifiers, and that was the problem we had had with existing statute that caused us problems. The qualifier that is now on there is a qualifier of significant impact on on-the-job safety of employees, and that qualifier only applies to the staffing portion, does not apply to the safety portion. With that, I'd be willing to answer any questions after they're done, but it's pretty straightforward.
Bob, go ahead, please. Let's finish everybody.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I would just like to emphasize what Brian said and appreciate the efforts that were put forth on this bill. I would also like to at least note for the record that our understanding of these amendments would also mean that not only would you use a reasonable person standard, but certainly with respect to the word significant, it shouldn't be prohibitive of a discussion around staffing levels, but they certainly should be significant. And as an example of what we believe is the understanding of that would be something that if you had four people and if you went down to three, or if you had three and you went down to two, and if it was going to be having a significant impact on the job safety of the employees, that you should have the discussion. Once again, this doesn't mandate anything. It just simply mandates the discussion takes place on that. And so that would be our understanding of the agreement and what that does. And once again, we appreciate the efforts on all of the parties and particularly on this committee to hopefully pass this important piece of legislation, and want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your efforts on this.
Thank you. Sir?
Mr. Chair, Steve Bryant, Interim Legislative Director with the League of Oregon Cities. I would agree with what's been said in terms that this has been a very intensive negotiation process. We've always stipulated that we're willing to talk about safety issues. Our preference would be that it not be at the bargaining table, but we understand pragmatically that this is what it's going to take to move on from this issue, and we can accept this language. I think this is a classic negotiation where both parties would tell you that it's difficult for us to accept, but we're in a position where we can live with this language. It does boil down to the difference between substantial and significant. I suspect it'll be future arbitrations that really decide what that difference is. We think significant does establish a significant bar for you to get to in terms of discussing staffing level issues. But we'll see what that bar is and over the course of time. This is language that we're prepared to accept.
Thank you. I just want to ask, I think you've already said it, but I had a question that was asked of me and it's written down here, and I understand that under this new language, this language will apply the, quote, reasonable person, unquote, standard as it relates to a discussion of safety and staffing levels. Am I accurate in that?
Mr. Chair, we
interpretation?
Certainly would defer to really dictionary definitions of what significant means.
Mm-hmm.
And we think there's an equivalency there between significant and substantial as based on a common understanding of those terms.
Mm-hmm. Brian, you want to weigh in on that for me?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you recall, when this bill first came out of committee, we were applying the reasonable person standard to the safety piece because, remember, we were talking about potential. And if we were going to delete potential, then is there any qualifiers on talking about safety in itself? And at that point, we believe that without qualifiers, that it was everybody's going to attempt to be reasonable. Ultimately, ERB would have to be the one that's going to make the judgment on whether people are going to be reasonable. But we were trying to just establish that what we're talking about here is a reasonable person standard. It's not a standard that's so high that you can't ever get to that particular bar. They objected to potential. We removed that, mm-hmm. and we thought we needed a qualifier just to deal with what are we really talking about here. If reasonable people can sit down and talk about safety, that's the standard we're really talking about.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Berger.
Is it time for comments or questions?
Either one, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. Gentlemen, thank you for this. I think that we're down to, you know, one word, significant. I think reasonable people can agree that it is not an insignificant word, but I think it is one that we can come to common understanding of, that it's not a minor thing, but it isn't a bar so high that we can't move there. This has been a very difficult process for all concerned. I think that I, for one, am ready to move forward and say that we have worked these words as hard as we can, and am pleased that we have gotten this far and hope we get to the very next step soon, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much. Representative Escobar.
Yes, I think maybe we have some good legislation here since both sides hate it. We may have some common ground here to go forth. I don't mind anyone talking about safety issues. I do not, and I've been very vocal about this, I do not want to get involved in staffing because that makes who runs what, who's the manager. So with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'm fine with this.
Anybody have any questions of these gentlemen? Or I'll entertain a motion.
Let it open up a work session.
Oh, we're under work session.
Yeah, we are under work session.
We were?
Yes, we
were.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, I want us to adopt the B8 amendments, isn't it? B8s?
Yes, that's right.
B7s, the B6s, no, the B8s, to Senate Bill 400.
Representative Esquivel moves we adopt the B8 amendment to Senate Bill 400. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
Yeah.
All right, very good. Representative?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I recommend we move Senate Bill 400 as amended to the House floor with a D-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 400 as amended to the Senate Bill 400B as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to go on record as saying I liked this bill a lot the first time we saw it. I still liked it when it came out of here. I worry that the more this language has changed, the more that's going to lead to argument about what the language means. But in light of the fact that today is Worker Memorial Day, which is the day that's set aside every year to commemorate people that are injured or killed on the job, and I think it is a bill that is its heart about saving lives that I am supportive of moving the bill forward as the best version we're going to be able to get this session.
Thank you, Representative. Anyone else before I get the last word?
John, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, you don't always get what you want in this building, but as my friend Bob Jensen says, there's always next session. So with that, Kristen, would you please call the roll?
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Gregory.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Excuse?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the greedy chair will carry this one on the floor. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2404.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2404 modifies the definition of employment relations to include certain staffing levels and safety issues for certain employees who are prohibited from striking. And we're having this work session to move the bill to rules.
That's all we're doing. This is nothing to do with if when Senate Bill 400 passes, as far as I'm concerned, this bill can die. But as we know, things change overnight, and I want to make sure we have something alive to work with just in case somebody comes out and says, I've changed my mind. Any other discussion on this bill? I'll entertain a motion.
Mr.
Representative Berger.
You ask for discussion on the bill?
Yes,
or,
ma'am.
Or on the motion?
No,
why don't you make the motion, because that's what I want to discuss.
Mr. Chair, I'll make the motion.
Thank you.
We'll move House Bill 3451 to the Committee on Rules.
Excuse me, House Bill 2404.
Oh, 2404, I'm sorry. House, I would withdraw the former motion and restate the motion. Move House Bill 2404 to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 2404 to the Committee on Ethics, Elections, and Rules. Is there discussion, Representative Berger?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will vote against the motion because I don't want this bill following me around. I'm on rules. And
well, it'll be a good hands, Representative.
And I mean, it's. I thought with my last vote I got rid of this ball and chain, and I'm serious. I'm not really thrilled to have it be the implication that it's hanging over my head in some way. So I am voting against the motion.
Very good, Representative. You've had the opportunity to get rid of it. I appreciate your sentiment, with all due respect. Any more discussion? All right, Kristen, please.
Hi.
No.
Yay.
Excuse.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. We're just moving on. I'm going to quickly, we'll open a house work session on House Bill 2557. Once again, folks, just so I don't think.
No, we Teresa, don't.
This is the original prevailing wage bill. 2944 is on its way over there happily. We're, I think, 40 or more votes off the floor. I just want to make sure this vehicle is still alive, just in case we need it for future reference. Is there any discussion?
Same one.
Thank you. That's well taken, Representative. Anyone else? All right, Kristen, would you please? Forgive me. I will entertain a motion to move it to the Committee on Ethics, Elections, and Rules. Representative.
Mr. Chair, it was pointed out to me that it perhaps is not the best thing for me to be making this motion.
Would someone, Representative Edwards.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that the committee move House Bill 2557 to the Committee on Ethics, Elections, and Rules.
Okay, Representative Edwards moves House Bill 2557 to the Committee on Ethics, Elections, and Rules. Is there discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, my same remarks apply. I don't like the implication that, you know, our votes and things that have gone by that there's some need to hang a bill over our heads like this. I don't want it to go to rules. We have spoken in the House on this issue, and I'll vote against
Thank
the
vote. Thank you, Representative. I appreciate that effort, that sentiment. Any further discussion? Kristen, please.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Excuse.
No.
Aye.
Aye. We're going to close work session on House Bill 2404. And I'm going to open up 2557. Close work session on House Bill 2557.
Mr. Chair, did that motion just carry that?
Yeah,
we
one,
yeah.
Two,
yeah.
One, two, three, four.
Okay.
So I'll close the work session on House Bill 2557, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3386. I'm going to step away, but I'd like Mr. Powell and his associate to come forward while Teresa
describes the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3386 is dealing with the regulation of vehicle protection products in that are sold in Oregon. We had the first hearing on this bill on April 9th. You have in front of you a -1 amendment. There's in your packets, there's a section-by-section overview of the bill and in hand engrossed bill that John will walk us through.
Thank you, Vice Chair Esquivel, and there's no other Vice Chair, but Vice Chair Esquivel and members of the committee. You have before you a hand engrossed bill, and I apologize for it because it's a cut and paste with somebody who has no computer skills at all, and that would be me.
Well, I was going to suggest, did you do this?
I actually did it last night, and it's not pretty, but I thought it would be much easier to see it in kind of bill form rather than going to the HTL form. And I don't know what HTL stands for other than it's on that little to the left of the PFD or PDF. You also have a one-sheet handout with my letterhead that kind of gives each section a title of what that particular section does. And I just run down through those very quickly. As you'll recall, 3386 establishes a regulation of a vehicle protection product. The warranties that are sold on vehicle protection products can pay for the deductible on insurance that isn't met and other things if the theft device that it warranties fails. So if you have purchased a theft device, whether it's etching on your windshield or a club, and it has a warranty, this bill governs that product, that warranty. And in the first section, in the definition section, probably the most important one is on page 1 of the mocked-up bill and on line 22 at the bottom. And in meeting with the vehicle dealers and manufacturers, we agreed to amend that section to make it very clear that a vehicle protection product means a product or system or service that is designed to prevent a particular type of loss or damage to a vehicle from theft. So it wouldn't apply to standard operational portions of the automobile. Section 2 on page 2 of the mocked-up bill establishes that a warranty, what it is and what it isn't. And it isn't insurance. And so that is made very clear in Section 2, that's a warranty. Section 3 provides consumer protection, including requirements to provide contact information, how to file a claim, where do you call, what the warranty covers, and a phone number at the Department of Consumer Business Services where you could file complaints. And it has other consumer protections in that section as well. Section 4, which is beginning in the latter part of page 3 of the mocked-up bill, requires that businesses that offer warranties, they must register with the Department of Consumer and Business Services in Oregon. And that section is instructions on the registration requirement. Section 5 requires that warrantors purchase reimbursement insurance that would protect the consumer in case the warrantor fails. So if you've made this purchase, mm-hmm. you have your warranty, you call up and they say this business failed. They've had to record with the Department of Consumer Business Services a reinsurance product so that those claims can be made whole. Section 6 of the bill on page 4 defines what a reimbursement insurance policy is and requires that in the case of cancellation, notice would go to the party who purchased it and the director of the Department of Consumer Business Services.
Section 7 allows a warrantor to designate an administrator to the warranties issued, so an somebody who is operational within in a jurisdiction. Section 8 requires the warrantor to keep very detailed records of the names of the people these are sold to, the address of each consumer, locations, dates, and to keep those records for 10 years if they go out of business. Section 9 prohibits the use of the term insurance in a warrantor's name so that there's no misimplication of what this product is, that it is indeed a warranty on these products, not an insurance product. Section 10 requires advertising to be truthful, and it's kind of standard language in that regard. Section 11 gives the director of DCBS rulemaking authority so that regulations, if needed, can be established over this product. And then Section 12 allows the director of DCBS to request of the Attorney General to enforce provisions of this Act. And I want to put on the record that an amendment is needed to this section. I mean, we'll do that on the Senate side. In consultation with the Attorney General's office, they want it made clear that they can enforce this Act without being asked by the director, and we totally agree with that. And in fact, would probably just remove the director's name in that line to say that the Attorney General can enforce this Act, because this is the Unfair Trade Practices Act, which is the bread and butter of that agency in enforcing fair trade. So we will tweet that on the Senate side and have agreed with them to do so. And finally, Section 13 just adds this Act to the Unfair Trade Practices Act. Section 14, 15, and 16 create the effective dates and emergency clause on the bill. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions. With me is Victor Smith, who is General Counsel for the National Vehicle Protection Association.
Thank you. I'd like to call Mr. Savage up from DCBS, but while he's coming, there's a lot here. And a lot of times I just have to count on faith. And yes, we will open up for questions, but I would like the department to at least weigh in on this before we open it up for questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lou Savage with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I actually wasn't prepared to state a position on this, but the department is neutral on the bill, and we don't have a position on the bill itself. Certainly, if the legislature decides that this is good public policy, we would be prepared to implement that. The only question would be whether the program can be funded properly. And my understanding from Mr. Powell is that his clients are prepared to work out a fee arrangement that would fund this program. It would be something new for the department. We don't have the resources to do it now. So that would be the question.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the bill does authorize a fee.
A registration fee.
That we would work with the department to make sure that it's sufficient to pay their costs. Again, this would not be a huge administrative burden for the agency to provide this level of consumer protection. But we do the rulemaking authority and the fee setting authority is vested in the director.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note that this bill has an emergency clause on it. So given what was just said by the agency, if there were fees needed to fund this and yet it goes into effect immediately, how is that going to work?
Any one of you can answer that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Victor Smith with the National Vehicle Protection Association. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the way the bill is set up right now is that the emergency clause makes the bill effective immediately, but there's a delayed effective date for the registration. So the agency has the authority to begin acting on the bill, but the registration requirement's delayed till the first of the year so they can set up the filing structure. Our experience has been that the cost of administration is between $10,000 and $12,000 annually. There's probably 20 to maybe 30, but more likely in a state of this size, about 20 registrants that would register. So it's usually something that's fairly easy to administer. It's a one-page name, rank, and serial number type registration. File copies of your warranty, file a copy of your insurance policy, and you're good to go.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have the agency.
Me too. Believe me, I was thinking.
Well,
just like me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, we have not run the numbers on this. We would need time to get up and running. And so you raise a really good point about the emergency clause and whether really that's necessary. I don't know. In some ways, the smaller the program in terms of the number of registrants, you have to have a critical mass to run any sort of registration program. So whether those numbers are correct, I don't know in terms of how much it would take to run a program like this.
And, Mr. Chair, just a final question. Why do we need the emergency clause for this?
Mr. Chair and members, again, on if you look at the last page of the mocked-up bill, as it has sections 1 through 12 becoming effective and operative on January 1st of 2008, which would be the same date without the emergency clause. But as Mr. Smith stated, this, by making it effective immediately, the rulemaking authority, I think, could be used to begin to set a fee structure and that sort of thing.
I know I said that was my last
question.
That's
okay, go ahead.
Isn't it normal that an agency would start to work on something that had a future effective date so they'd be ready to implement it on the date, regardless of whether it had an emergency clause?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, that's correct. When a bill gets passed, we would get to work on rulemaking and hopefully have enough time so that when the effective date comes to pass, that things would be up and going.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum, your question? Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. On Section 13, line 36, 39, 41, 43, 45 deals with real estate. Why don't you explain that to me?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, are you on page 7?
6.
I think that's existing law.
Yeah. That's existing law, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I find this odd to find this in this section.
Mr. Chairman.
Especially when you said represents a real estate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, that is the statute that's being referenced is the unfair trade practices law. So what one of the provisions of the bill adds this regulation into the car statute.
Okay, so we're taking the car section and add it into this section.
Right.
Got it.
Representative Berger?
I have some real fundamental questions, Mr. Chair.
Shoot away.
Okay. Gentlemen, vehicle protection product, that's my car keys and my, okay, are we talking about a club?
Vehicle protection product, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we're talking about a product that is designed to prevent theft, but it comes with a warranty, okay. So it wouldn't be your keys unless
it would be like the club that locks your, I mean, tell me what this is.
If the club is sold with a warranty that provides that kind of payout, yes, the club would be covered.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, if I could proceed this so I understand this. So the consumer could buy the club, or they could buy the club with a warranty.
Well, generally, these products aren't sold separately like that. They're just sold as a product with a warranty, and that's pre-established.
Are they sold currently in the state?
Yes, ma'am.
But the warranty is... doesn't mean anything. Is that what the problem we're trying to solve?
No, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, what we're trying to address is for the most part these products are successfully sold and the warranties are paid as claims are made, but they're similar to what's going on in the service contract industry, and Oregon has a service contract law and we're following the pattern that's been set in that industry. For our industry, there have been some national bankruptcies. There have been some lawsuits that we've encountered which allege confusion over whether or not the warranty is actually a warranty or is insurance. And what we're trying to do is do two things as an industry, kind of police ourselves, not raising barriers to entry, but just providing a structure of how these products will be handled. And so what we've done is say that if you sell these products, and the problems that we're trying to address are a consumer that might foreseeably have a claim against a warrantor that might go bankrupt and be unable to pay. We're also trying to address a situation where a warrantor, for some whatever reason, might not pay. And if there is an insurance policy, our bill specifies that that consumer can file a claim then directly with the insurance company backing that warranty. So there's some real substantial consumer protections in the bill. The other things we're trying to do is clarify that it is a warranty, that these disclaimers are given to the consumer so they won't be confused. And that way, the auto dealers know what they're dealing with, the consumers know what they're dealing with, and there's a substantial resource behind the warranty so nobody's left holding the bag.
Thank you, sir. That makes me... Now I understand what we're doing.
I don't want to buy one of these and then end up not getting anything. But I got a more serious question than that. Where do I get one of them? Where do I get one of them trunk monkeys? Anyway, I'm sorry. Any more questions of these fine gentlemen? And there's a lot going on here, and it's complex, and I just appreciate all the time you spent and effort. Any further questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I will entertain a motion. Anyone who's brave.
Weren't there amendments?
The dash ones.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
I'll make a motion that we move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3386.
Representative Smith moves that we adopt dash one amendments 3386. Discussion. That the mock-up is the dash one, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Is there a discussion on the movement motion to adopt the dash one?
Nope.
Very good. Any objection? Very good. Thank you very much. Representative?
I'll move the House Bill 3386 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 3386 to the floor as amended with due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I am not persuaded that the emergency clause needs to be on this bill, and I would ask that we send the bill, if we're going to send it out this way, that we request that the emergency clause be removed once it gets over to the Senate side. If we cannot do it now, which I would assume we can, if we have to move it.
Right. Let's see. Yeah, we are.
Mr. Chair, my suggestion is to have Representative Rosenbaum carry the bill, and then she can mention that.
Well, or whoever carries it. Mr. Powell, would you like to?
I guess the question would be, would the sponsors be willing to agree to that?
That's a good question.
Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, yes.
Thank you, and I'm confident Mr. Powell will take care of that. I trust him
thank
that
you.
He will. Very good. Any further discussion? All right, Kristen, please.
Representative
Edwards.
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse?
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative
Rosenbaum. Aye. Yeah, I know. I see that. We'll take care of that again. Would anyone like to carry this bill? Well, Representative Edwards, God bless you, you're a fine American. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3386. I see Representative McPherson is in here, so I'm going to move to House Bill, open work session on House Bill 2397. Teresa?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2397 allows the Public Employees Retirement Board to accept rollover contributions from a retiree solely for the purpose of paying amounts claimed by the board as overpayments or other improperly made payments. You have in front of you a dash 5 amendment. That's from Representative McPherson. It adds a new provision to the measure that if a benefit is paid to a beneficiary by reason of death of a PERS or OPSERP member, the beneficiary may elect to have all or part of the distribution of the benefit paid in an eligible rollover contribution to either an individual retirement plan or an individual retirement annuity.
Thank you. Representative McPherson. And Mr. Delaney, you want to just come on up, too, just in case. Thank you. Go ahead, Representative, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Greg McPherson, House District 38, part of Lake Oswego and part of Southwest Portland. And I came to present on the Dash 5 amendments, although I think I understand the underlying bill as well, if you needed any more comment on that.
Okay, we have heard it once. Greg, if you, Representative, forgive me, if you'd like to just explain what your amendment's doing, and then
I will do that. Last year, there was a federal statute called the Pension Protection Act, an act that did a range of things affecting retirement benefits, and one of the things it did was to expand the availability of tax-free rollovers. And that's what this bill is about, is tax-free rollovers, and that's simply the mechanism where a distribution that's received from a plan is sent usually directly to an IRA or another employer-sponsored plan so that the participant, the member, does not pay tax on the amount that's distributed, and it's not taxed until it comes out of that IRA or subsequent employer plan. And one of the things they did was to, in the Pension Protection Act that Congress did, was to expand the availability of rollovers by death beneficiaries. And what this bill does is to take advantage of that new opportunity by adding to three statutes. The PERS statute, that's section 4 of the on the dash 5 amendments, is relates to PERS, which because it's ORS chapter 238, in section 5, which is 238 cap A, is the OPSERF, the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan. That's the plan for newly, more recently hired public employees. And section 7 and following sections on page 3 relates to the Oregon Savings Growth Plan, which is a another retirement vehicle of tax-deferred savings. And there's parallel language added in each one of those provisions that allows a death beneficiary that's not a spouse to be able to make a tax-free rollover, which was not allowed under federal tax law until the Pension Protection Act was enacted last year. So this is simply to give the that option to the non-spouse death beneficiary of members of those respective plans, of PERS, of the OPSERP, and the Oregon Savings Growth Plan.
Thank you. Mr. Delaney, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Chair, members of the committee, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of PERS. No, the representative is exactly correct.
Mr. McPherson, Representative McPherson has a handle on this subject matter. Is there any questions to these fine gentlemen? Questions?
No. Explained it very well.
Very good. Well, thank you. I'll entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 5.
I'll make a motion.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2397.
Thank you. Representative Smith moves we adopt the Dash 5 amendment to House Bill 2397. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? Very good. Very good. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2397 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 2397 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Very good. And Kristen, call the roll, please.
Representative
Berger.
Aye.
Representative
Berger.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Sewell.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Holley.
Excuse me.
Representative
Smith.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Would anyone like to carry this bill on the floor? Oh, Representative McPherson, would you like to carry it? Would Representative Comp like to carry this bill?
He said he would offer to her first because she's sponsored.
Very good.
If not, I'd be happy to carry it.
Very good. And you'll be there to assist, I'm confident. Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2397, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3400. Teresa?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3400 removes the current sunset of January 1st, 2008 on statute regarding fall protection for workers engaged in steel erection at the federal standard of 30 feet, and there's an emergency clause in the measure effective on passage, and there is no amendment.
No amendments. We've heard this bill already. Yes. It's an extension of House Bill 3010 from 2003 session. Would anyone like any more explanation? We have Ms. Dilks, who represents PacWest, who represents the ironworkers, and we have the ironworkers union in the room. If anyone would like to ask any questions, we have also have OSHA, right, in the room, if anyone would like to ask the department any questions. If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move it.
Thank you, Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3400 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 3400 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right. Very good. Kristen, please.
Aye.
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 Excuse?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the greedy chair will carry this one on the floor, Kim.
You just can't.
I'm going to close.
Yes.
There's a word session on House Bill 3400. And I'm going to, gosh darn it, I want to just ask Mr. Shannon to. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2280.
House Bill 2280 removes the statutory requirement that the public employee's retirement system perform a biennium review of retirement benefits that are provided by a public employer to police officers and firefighters if the employer provides retirement benefits under a different system. It also establishes that the PERS board shall execute such reviews at times that as may be established by rule at the expense of the public employer. You have in front of you a -2 amendment which replaces one of the sections of the bill that establishes that a public employer, police officers, and firefighters need not provide benefits to employees under PERS if the board determines that the employer does provide benefits that are equal to or better than benefits that would be provided to equivalent employee classes under PERS, such as Tier 1, Tier 2, and Officer. Mm-hmm. It also establishes that the employer does not, if the employer does not comply with this provision for any employee class as described under the measures provisions, the board shall require the employees to be PERS members within 180 days after the termination is made, unless the employer provides retirement benefits that are equal to or better than it's offered in person.
Thank you. I'd like Mr. DeLashmit and Mr. Delaney, if you'd come with, just in case we need you, and we always do. Whether there's any questions today or not, we always need you, believe me. Mm-hmm. And just kind of walk us through the amendment and refresh us on the bill again, please.
For the record, Brian DeLashmit, representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations. If you have your file with you and recall my little chart.
Yep.
Okay. That's the easiest way. Thank you, Representative Edwards. Our issue was not with the base bill itself and getting rid of the biennial study. Our only concern was that when they do the study, that they're comparing apples to apples, that if somebody would have been in Tier 1 and they're in, let's say, Springfield, which is a non-PERS, that in fact they're comparing that plan, they're comparing what would have been Tier 2, and they're comparing OPSERP to OPSERP. The -2s replaced the -1s with the exception of one additional language. There was uncertainty as to what happens if they don't meet that standard. Do they automatically then get swept into PERS? Because the existing statute would say if you don't meet the standard, then you automatically have to have the employees go over to PERS. What we did with the additional section, which is starting on line 21 and then going on the back page, is give them 180 days to make whatever deficiencies they were found in the study. To make those corrections before then, in fact, that plan would then have to be, they'd have to move those folks over. We felt it was proper to give them the ability of time to react. At the same time, we wanted to make sure that, in fact, benefits were not falling for those people because comparisons was a 25-year employee and non-PERS plan being compared to an OPSERP plan, which was, in fact, Tier 3. And if you recall the history, this equal to or better has not been changed since we established Tier 2 or Tier 3. So originally it was only established, so we're comparing the one PERS plan to all the other plans that are non-PERS for PNF. And now we've done a Tier 2 and an OPSERP, and this piece has not been changed since then. So that's what we're attempting to do in this amendment.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Delaney, would you like to add anything to that?
Mr. Chairman, available to answer questions.
All right. I'd like to call Maria Keltner up, please. Just here we are, guys.
Uh-huh. Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, of Maria Keltner, representing the Employers PERS Alliance. The Employers PERS Alliance is made up of League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, Oregon School Boards Association, Community Colleges and Special Districts Association as a group. Generally, the Alliance supported the original House Bill 2280. And then in talking with the 10 equal to or better than entities, there are four counties, Morrow, Tillamook, Union, and Wheeler, and four cities, Forest Grove, Portland, Seaside, and Springfield and the Dalles, and one special district. So we're talking about 10 entities. Wheeler County, for example, only has four ETOB equal to or better than people that are eligible for the plan. And they were quite set back budgetarily with the last test that was done, which cost them over $22,000, and they're saying we could have had another person for this. So they very much all supported not having to do a test every 2 years, which was the original bill. The amendments, the -2 amendments, will increase the complexity of doing the review and the test, which is one of the things we were trying to get away from. to make it more simple and not do it every 2 years. Moving the information that I received from PERS and their actuary is that from going to the way the test was done, it would cost to do it the next time $8,000 if you use a hypothetical data set and $12,000 to use the actual employee data. By going to the three-level kind of a review, the information received was it will be $24,000 for the hypothetical data and $36,000 for the actual data. And we're looking at, again, Wheeler County is probably the smallest of these entities, although Morrow doesn't have a lot of people in their group either. It still seemed like a tremendous amount in terms of doing the review. So increasing the cost and increasing the complexity are why the entities would rather that you not adopt the amendments but adopt the regular, the bill as it was presented.
If I may, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, remember that the base philosophy of the bill is you're getting rid of an automatic every other year review, which they have to bear the cost. And the only kicker in which when they would have to do a review that would potentially, and I wouldn't concede that it's going to be additional cost, is when that plan makes a change. We're not talking about if PERS makes a change. We're talking about if Tillamook County, City of Portland decides they're going to need to make a change. That would be the kicker that would, in fact, require the study. It's not that we're having a two-year review and it's going to be more expensive to them. We're getting rid of that with the base bill. We're now talking about the kicker being they make a change to their plan. Then we believe they should be comparing this to this and this. If they make no change to their plans, there's no kicker that requires the study, requires no outlay of dollars.
Okay. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What constitutes a change? I mean, how do you define a change to the plan?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, again, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of PERS. By rule, the statute doesn't always make it clear. It just talks about change to the plan. By rule, we've said if it was a change in the benefit, it would, if a change would create a benefit change.
Okay.
So simply saying you'll do a blue form instead of red form would not be a change that would impact.
But if there's no change made, there's no study necessary.
Exactly.
So those entities that Ms. Keltner spelled out there, if they never change, there's no study.
There's no study. There's no equal to or better.
The City of Portland can afford a study, be quite frank with you, and who knows what they're going to do with theirs, but that's a different issue. Any other questions of these nice people? All right. Well, thank you. What's the committee's desire here? There's only five of us here. I'm supportive of this.
I'm fine with it.
All right. Then I'll entertain a motion. Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the -2 amendments to House Bill 2280.
Representative Escobar moves we adopt the -2, right?
Yes.
Amendments to House Bill 2280. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? And I do share the concerns. I hope it doesn't cost them a lot of money, but it sounds like they in all likelihood won't. Very good. Any objection? All right, then. So moved, Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move 2280 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves House Bill 2280 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Kristen, please.
Aye.
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 Excused.
Aye.
Aye. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this bill on the floor?
I can carry it if you like.
Thank you, Representative. That's very generous of you. I'm going to close work session, House Bill 2280. I'm going to move to the work session, House Bill 2212.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's actually 2812.
That's
okay.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for correcting me.
That's all right, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2812 requires the Oregon State Police to establish a base pay chart for troopers that are equal to or greater than the average of the base pay for city police officers that are employed by the five most populous cities in Oregon. And also establishes the pay system, allows for adjustments. And the base pay system must be established no later in January 1st, 2013. There's currently a Ways and Means referral on the measure.
All right. Well, Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm one of the co-sponsors of this, and I've done some substantial digging around. And what this bill does, it brings our state police trooper with a five-year experience level up to where we are no longer the training facility for the larger municipalities and counties. Right now, we lack significantly in our state trooper on their pay, especially a senior trooper with five or more years. In fact, I believe it's, according to my information, we're about $700 from the top, and from the top 10, we're about $500-$600. So it's pretty dramatic. And what happens is that we train our state police extremely well. Then we don't seem to pay them as well as we need to, so the larger municipalities and counties are hiring them off at a higher rate, so therefore we're turning into the farm club for the other municipalities and counties.
Thank you, Representative. Well, four of the sponsors of this bill are here, so if you want to entertain a motion, I'll gladly hear it.
Mr. Chair, I had a note in my file that there was a desire to get the subsequent referral removed. And
Teresa,
yes,
you want
to Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, yes. In doing so, one of the first steps before the committee submits a letter to the speaker is to inquire with them, with Legislative Fiscal, about whether they would like us to have the bill down to Ways and Means. In talking to the analysts assigned to the bill, although there is no immediate fiscal impact due to the bill, because it is it's a change with the potential impact to the budget, they would like to see the bill.
And the speaker decides that, and we're just moving on. Representative Escobar, would you like a motion? Make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 28, and this goes to Ways and Means, did you
yes.
say? That we send a House Bill 2812 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves that we send House Bill 2812 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I just think this is a really good idea. I agree. This state should not be a farm team for all those wonderful entities out there. And I think these men and women deserve to get paid comparable pay. Any further discussion, comments? Kristen, please.
Aye.
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 Excuse.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, very good. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2812. Anything for the good of the order?
Yeah, I'd just like to say how fast you can move on Friday afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.